Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
This is How to Behave on Heritage Radio Network. This week, the IRS revealed that it was applying extra scrutiny to nonprofit applications from conservative organizations. Yes, it's true. Political organizations can get nonprofit status. What a country. The Justice Department was under fire for obtaining the phone records of reporters from the Associated Press, answering the question, how do you behave when security has totally trumped civil rights? Mente Teo's imaginary girlfriend is number 69 on Maxim's Hot 100 list. That's how you behave when you don't exist. The idea of Google Glasses is starting to freak out Congress, strip clubs, casinos, and everyone else on the planet. How will you behave when everyone is able to record video of everything everyone does just by looking at them? On Kitchen Nightmares, Yelp and In Their Restaurant, the owners of Amy's Baking Company in Scottsdale, Arizona, freaked the freak out. If you haven't read about them, please use your internet and do so. They've created whole new categories of how not to behave. The CEO of Abercrombie & Fitch said that his brand is exclusionary and he wants to market only to cool, good-looking people. Well, we know of a surefire way to make sure that everyone is cool and good-looking. Drink lots of wine. I'm Brian Kaiser. This is How to Behave, the wine show. My guests today are all wine professionals. Sarah Soutel is a certified sommelier and wine educator and is the new wine director at Moss Farmhouse and Moss La Griade, sister restaurants in the West Village. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Brian.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Bree Conway is a wine importer with Broadbent Selections. Welcome, Bree.
Thank you.
And Owen, you'll have to sing your reply, too. In addition to being an accomplished musician and world traveler, Owen Kotler works for Artisan Wines, a distributor and importer of fine wines.
Thank you, Brian.
Wow, I'm so sorry I asked for that. Thank you, Owen.
Me too.
It's great to see you. And sitting across from me, a woman who cares so much about her job that she drank wine all week as research, Hannah Howard.
Hi.
What'd you drink this week?
Well, I drank very little wine this week and therefore suck and failed to do my homework.
Yes, a woman who doesn't take her job seriously and therefore didn't drink enough wine.
But at least she's drinking now.
But
she's
I'm drinking now and fixing the situation.
Okay, so we're doing a blind tasting. Do you know what you're drinking, Hannah?
I thought we were drinking Riesling.
That was my guess, too. Does anybody have a different guess? No.
No.
Obviously
the
Riesling.
Suspension.
Riesling from?
Suspense.
From a screwed cap bottle. Mm.
That's not a country.
I didn't even think of where from.
The Finger Lakes.
Germany. New Zealand.
I'm going to go Finger Lakes. I think Hannah might be right.
Ontario.
Oh. Nice. Ooh. You were close.
The non-wine
was the closest without going over.
Yes, nice. She was. So the phone lines are open if you're listening to the live stream at heritageradionetwork.org and you want to join the conversation. Call us at 718-497-2128. Little bird told me that Hannah's mom might be listening live today.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Hannah's mama.
Hi, Hannah's mom.
You...
If you exist,
hi, Molly.
Call.
And Owen's girlfriend, Molly.
Oh, I thought that was Hannah's mother's name.
Oh, no.
Hi, Molly.
Holly is apparently, or Molly is apparently listening also live. So the two of you race to the phone and try to be the first person ever to call in to heritageradionetwork.org. I just saw Joe lean over. Is he possibly going to answer the phone? 718-497-2128. No, apparently not.
Molly's a sommelier. We might not want her calling in, actually.
So we're here to talk about how to behave when drinking wine in restaurants. I want to start by having Sarah, who is the one who actually spends her days and nights serving wine in restaurants, to walk us through the process of what goes on when we're ordering a bottle in a restaurant and why we're doing it, importantly. Because I think there are a lot of people out there who have seen scenes in movies or have seen parodies on TV shows about the ordering of wine. And people love to joke about swirling and sniffing and being like, oh, it's absurd yet flaccid. But then they get into a restaurant and they don't actually know why they're going through the motions there.
I think the absurd and flaccid is when they're talking about something else, not wine, but I'm not sure.
It's an old Robin Williams joke. Joe keeps moving around in the booth, making me think he's going to answer the phone. Come on, Hannah's mom.
Come on, phone.
Bring it home for us. 718-497-2128. So, Sarah, walk us through the process, why we're doing that.
Well, guys, I hate to interrupt you, but you have a caller.
We have a caller for the first time.
Yes.
Caller. You're on. My God, Hannah's mom, you have a cold, don't you?
Hello, my name's Matt. Can you hear me?
Hi, Matt. Yes, we can hear you. Welcome to How to Behave.
Matt, you're not my mom.
Where are you calling from, Matt?
How do you know that?
Where are you calling from, Matt?
I'm calling from Chicago.
Oh, you're calling from Chicago. I know who this Matt is.
I know who this Matt is.
Thank you.
It's a great BYO city.
Is it a great BYO city?
It certainly is.
It is. It is indeed.
What are your favorite places to bring your own?
My favorite is a restaurant called Schwa, but there are many other choices, including El Ideas, where I'm having dinner tonight.
You are?
Brian, should we join him?
We should.
You guys are invited to join us. I'm sure we can squeeze you in if you can make it here by 7:30.
God, we better wrap this up, Brian.
With the time change, we might actually be able to make it.
You could.
Or with the time zones.
So I have a question for all the experts there.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Let's say I'm dining at a restaurant in Manhattan, and the tab is $100 for the food and $100 for the wine before tax. How much do I tip?
Sarah Sotel?
How was your service?
My service was good, and the sommelier was a little bit helpful in making the suggestion, and the wine service was fun.
I think if you enjoyed yourself, then at least 20% on the subtotal. But that's also me. I mean, some people of my parents' generation, they're in their 70s, they do not tip on the wine. I had to train them to tip on top of liquor and spirits and and wine. And but now they're so well trained, they automatically do 20% after tax.
Owen? I agree, 20%.
20% on the subtotal?
Yes.
Bree?
Yeah. Absolutely. I never actually even consider the wine charge. I just look at the total, like, my service was wonderful, and give, yeah, absolutely, give 20% at least.
I hate to be boring, but I must agree.
Yeah, what would you tip on that, Matt, from Chicago?
I recently read, I historically have tipped 20% on the subtotal, maybe even more if the overall service has been superlative.
Yeah, I think everyone in this room probably actually leaves 25%, but we can't say that everybody should do that.
Yeah.
But I've often heard over the years that you shouldn't necessarily tip on the alcohol, whether it's wine or something else. And I recently read a sommelier quote in a newspaper from a New York restaurant, I don't remember which one, saying that you should tip 20% on the food and 10% on the wine.
Who was that?
We'll have to look that up and have that person on the show.
They won't be working in this town for much longer.
No. No one will be working for them. Yeah, I strongly disagree. I understand why people ask the question. It doesn't take any more energy to bring a $20 or to bring a $200 bottle or a $1,000 bottle than it does to bring a $50 bottle. So why should I tip?
20% on the total, but I actually think that's not true. If you're working in a place where there's a $1,000 bottle of wine, the sommelier who works there and who probably makes their living at least in large part off gratuities does a lot more to get that $1,000 bottle to the table in good condition and to know what they're talking about when they deliver it to you than the sort of place that's got a bunch of waiters who haven't tried the $40 bottles and can't help.
And also it's the service throughout the meal. Have they been topping off the wine? Have they been...
Did they bring you the right wine glass? Was it polished?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's a related question. In a BYO restaurant where I'm taking my own wine and there's no corkage fee, but there's obviously somebody opening the wine and washing the glasses and whatever, you still just tip 15 or 20% on the food tab?
I would leave a tip on 20% of what I thought the bill would be if we'd actually ordered that wine there.
Yeah.
I would leave more than the 15 or 20, but I don't know that I would try to figure out how much the wine would have been, because the restaurant chooses to BYO, something like Schwa. It's not like you have the option. Either you show up with wine or you don't drink.
I can't believe that you don't charge a corkage. That's amazing to me that you don't charge a corkage.
Does Schwa charge a corkage?
$5 per person.
And does that per bottle or is that for the evening?
That's for the evening.
Wow.
And most restaurants in Philadelphia are BYO and they don't charge a penny for corkage.
Yeah. That's a gift.
Wow, that is.
Yeah, I
it's not a gift when you know the wine laws pertaining to Pennsylvania.
That's true.
I go to these restaurants that don't serve wine. I mean, I own a restaurant and I go to restaurants that don't serve wine and I don't know how they make a living. My restaurant, we sell a lot more wine than we do food. That's how we pay the bills. But it must work because there are lots of places that do it. Mm-hmm. Obviously at places like Schwa and L Ideas, the food is not cheap, is it, Matt?
No, it's not. The Schwa is 100 or 110 and L Ideas is going to be more than that tonight. I think 130 or 140.
Yeah. Per person. Yeah. Just to walk through the door.
Per person, that's right. Yeah. But, of course, same thing happens at a $20 per person Thai restaurant, too.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, we're going to have to move on. Thank you for calling, Matt, from Chicago.
First caller.
Just wanted to be the first official caller and beat up both Molly and Hannah's mom.
You did, and we're gonna send you a certificate acknowledging your achievement here today.
We do have another caller.
All right. Bon appetit, we're going to have to take Matt. Another caller. Thank you, Matt. Bye. Hi, caller. You're on the air. This is How to Behave.
Hi, How to Behave. This is Rachel, Hannah's mother.
Hi.
No pressure here.
Here's Matt.
So great to hear from you, Rachel. How are you?
It's so great to talk to you guys.
So do you have a question about wine in restaurants?
As Hannah probably knows well, I'm a fairly serious wino and really love to order wine, but less and less order it in restaurants because even though I don't think I'm a really cheap person, when you really like to drink wine and it's $15 a glass and you're not drinking what the person you're with is drinking, it just becomes kind of crazy expensive.
It does.
So, it's crazy expensive, especially when, you know, when I go to a restaurant and there's amazing food, I can sort of really appreciate and love the care that went into the preparation of the food. But a bottle of wine to me is a bottle of wine, and I appreciate curating it well and vetting it well and making those great choices. But at the end of the day, a bottle of wine to me is a sense cold, but kind of a commodity, and in a way that the food isn't. And so I have a tremendous preference for bringing my own wine.
Habits are expensive.
Drinking what I love.
And when you bring your own wine, you're just bringing inexpensive wine, right?
Like, no, not necessarily. I mean, sometimes I'm bringing wonderful wine, but I'm not paying a gazillion dollars for it.
But, so, just, you know, but to say it's a...
I mean, in our family, I think a sort of nice bottle of wine is in the $15 to $25 range. And that's great stuff.
Yeah, if you're paying $25 in a retail store, that's better be a good bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Right. So that's, I mean, a great deal. So, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we've spent a lot of time in New Jersey lately, and in New Jersey, like Philly, there are a lot of bring your own kind of joints, and it's kind of fun because you can go out to eat without having any anxiety about the bill getting out of control.
Sarah, do you have feelings about this?
About bringing your own wine?
Yeah.
I think it depends on the venue. Yeah. Place where I just left, the Grand Tier at the Met Opera, I had an ass-kicking wine list. And so when people would bring in their, I don't know, like off vintage, like 2009 Bordeaux. And I'm like, why are you drinking that? Like, it's so young. And I hate to be the wine snob, but.
That's why you're here.
Thank you. But if you're going to a place where you know the wine list stinks, then yes, bring your own wine and absorb the zero corkage, the $40 corkage, and enjoy your bottle of wine. But I think it depends on the venue.
Would you have a problem with it if they brought in their own? I mean, okay, so it is 2009 Bordeaux.
Would
you have a problem
if they also bought my own wine another bottle from your list? Serves wine. I didn't know that was an option. I would never do that.
You're talking about going to restaurants, Rachel, that don't serve wine?
Right.
Oh,
that are sort of BYO restaurants.
I'm sorry, that's great. Yeah, knock yourself out.
Yeah, if they're BYO, bring your own.
So that's sort of the fun piece.
That's what restaurants like that are for.
You know,
oh, yeah. In that case,
don't bring bottles, bring cases.
Yeah, or
absolutely.
Boxes. Just put that box of Alizé on the table. And.
But, you know, I think that's one of the downfalls of New York City. It's hard to go to a restaurant and get a reasonably priced bottle of wine. There are a lot of places. Casa Lula, for instance, there's plenty of great choices, $30, $40, $50, whatever, you know. But a lot of restaurants, you have to start at $75 or $80, and that shouldn't be the case. You know, it should be more accessible.
But I do think if you're, you know, like Matt from Chicago, who we just talked to, if you're going to a restaurant where it costs $120 per person in food just to walk through the door, you've got to have a little bit of money to walk through that door. And in that case, it's probably not crazy for the restaurant to expect that you can afford at least a $65 or $75 bottle of wine.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Right. I don't always think it's necessary, but I understand when I go into those kinds of restaurants, that's what it's going to cost
me. Yeah, no, absolutely. If it's an upper-end restaurant like that, I totally agree.
Yeah.
And, you know, and for me, the other exception, quite frankly, is a place like Casa Lula where I've gone and I've had an opportunity to taste things that I wouldn't ordinarily taste.
Yeah.
And so then you're sort of having an experience of a wine that isn't in your usual repertoire, and then you can go out and look for it, and that's a whole lot of fun.
But that's,
you know, that's sort of about experiencing the wine and tasting the wine, not about having the wine as sort of part of the meal.
Yeah.
And for me, that's a different kind of experience.
Well, we're going to have to say thank you very much for calling, Rachel.
Oh, you're
and we
welcome.
Have to take
it's
a
so
break.
Great to hear
we're
you guys.
So excited that you were the second caller ever on How to Behave.
You're the best, Mom.
I'm honored.
Ever.
All right,
guys.
Thanks,
bye.
Rachel. So
thank you.
We are going to have to take a break. When we come back, smell my cork, please. This is How to Behave on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You're listening to Squeezy Breezy by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
If I had $1 million, I'd give it up for just one sip from your sweet cup. If I had a
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. You know, there's no more telling aspect, no more revealing virtue of a group of people having evolved in a lovely way than how they feed themselves, how they entertain, how they put food on the table, what they put on the table. Heritage Radio Network provides the clearest evidence that there's hope for us yet. Heritage Radio's like Fairway Market in that we both care deeply about what you're having for dinner tonight. Heritage Radio Network is not just about food, though. Every time I tune in, I learn something about things other than food, too. Architecture, design, stuff like that. But from where I stand, I still say, if you can't eat it, what's the point? For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back. This is How to Behave on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, The Wine Show. We are two-thirds of the way through, and we haven't even started. We haven't even allowed Sarah to start talking about how to order wine in restaurants. So I'm just going to keep going on that theme. We were talking during the break about what we were just talking about bringing wine into restaurants, bringing your own wine. And I think the takeaway is basically, if you're going to a restaurant with good wine, it is not appropriate to bring crappy wine just to save money. I shouldn't even say crappy, but just to bring inexpensive wine just to save money, because you can buy a bottle for $10 and the corkage fee is $10, and that's cheaper than buying their $60 bottle of wine. I think most restaurants are going to think that's just rude and inappropriate. And
classless.
And if everybody did that, the restaurant wouldn't be able to stay in business. Like, that's not how the...
How to behave.
That's not how to behave. Exactly. But if you have a really special bottle of wine, if you walk into a fine restaurant and you say, we're here to celebrate my daughter's 21st birthday, and we brought this wine we bought from the year of her birth, and we'd like to open it.
That's acceptable.
Any cool restaurant is going to say, absolutely. That's awesome, right?
Particularly if you share with the staff.
If you share with the staff, yeah.
No, but I'm being serious.
I know.
No, absolutely.
Saying, have a taste.
Yeah. Under a circumstance like that, they should welcome you, and they should absolutely not charge a corkage.
I would say they shouldn't charge a corkage too.
And that's a special circumstance.
And we also talked about, if you buy wine off the list and open some of your own wine, most restaurants are going to think you're cool too and likely not charge you exorbitant corkage fees.
Yeah, I mean, I bring wine to restaurants a fair amount, depending on where I am. Not in New York so much, but I've never, ever brought a bottle and not offered the staff wine, ever.
Yeah, that's how to behave. If you have a good wine and you bring it into a restaurant, you give the bottom, quarter, eighth of the bottle to the staff to taste.
I tell them to bring a glass right away. And often they're a little shy.
Yeah.
And I want them to taste it. I want them to, because they don't know the wine.
That's a situation I get into in restaurants all the time, where I say the customer is always right. I don't care what your boss said about drinking at work. If I said you need to share my bottle of wine, I'm in charge because I'm the customer, right? Okay, Sarah, so with the 30 seconds we have left in this episode, tell us about why we go through the process we do of opening a bottle of wine in a restaurant.
Oh, it's kind of a loaded question.
Well, okay, so let's start at the beginning. I don't eat in fine dining restaurants very much. I come in, I'm with my wife. We're celebrating our third anniversary. This is one of two times a year we eat in a restaurant, mm-hmm. the other being her birthday. Mm-hmm.
Honey, I don't know what fork to use.
I don't know what Merlot is. Where do we start? We have the wine list. What should we be looking for? What should we be doing to help us decide what bottle of wine?
I think this is when it's important for the sommelier or your captain or whoever is running the wine program to ask questions, and not mm-hmm. questions to make them feel uncomfortable, but it's, what do you usually drink at home? What do you like? And if they say reds, then it's what do you typically enjoy? What do you usually pick up? And if a lot of people, when they feel they're put on the spot, so I'll offer, do you usually drink Pinot Noir or Cabernet Sauvignon? And I start with big varietals that people will recognize.
I usually drink wine with pretty animals on the label.
I get that sometimes, and I'll say, oh, like the chook, or
frog, or an eagle.
Yeah, but you ask questions, because the last thing you want them to do is feel intimidated or stupid, because then you lose the sale, you lose their trust. They're less likely to come back. They're less likely to order a second bottle of wine.
Yeah, and I feel like the advice that I would give to diners in that situation is ask questions.
It's absolutely
way cooler to ask questions about what you don't know than to pretend you know things you don't know, or to mm-hmm. just miss opportunities because mm-hmm. you're not asking.
Mm-hmm.
And to just order what you always order.
Sometimes I ask what their favorite movie is, or who their favorite actor is.
Yeah.
And I'll kind of personify a wine in my head. If they're like, I like Russell Crowe, then I'll be like, you need an Australian Shiraz.
I played the game. The movie game is great.
The movie game is good. Yeah.
But,
is good.
As somebody who knows quite a bit about wine, I think, I go to restaurants and I ask all the time.
Yeah.
I look at the wine list. I want to drink something I don't know. Okay. So somebody comes over and I say, okay, yeah, this is what I like. And often there's a blank stare.
Yeah.
You know?
When you order the wine you don't want?
I'm asking their
advice. They can't answer the questions.
Oh.
Yeah, they can't answer the question. But I think people should not be afraid to ask questions. And I ask questions all the time.
Just I think everyone in this room is the other extreme. We ask way too many questions. Too obscure.
But I find, like, you know,
Are these grapes from on the hill or down in the valley? Like, what?
No, but I find that often in restaurants, there's not enough knowledge.
Yes, that is true. That is a different
show.
So the
people working on the floor should have more knowledge.
They should. But that
and
is
the question
different
becomes: whose fault is that? And then it's the beverage directors or the wine directors.
It's your fault, Sarah, or
it's all
mine.
My fault. I'll
it's
take it.
One of us.
It is
okay. So the wine comes.
Yes.
And you present the wine to the guest. You show them the label.
Show them the label.
What are they looking for, and what should they be responding?
They're looking to make sure that what they ordered is what's in your hand. So you can point with your finger or with your wine key. You can go, this is the 2010 Taws Riesling from the Niagara Peninsula. There you go. That's what we're drinking today. And then they'll be like, oh, I thought that I ordered the J.J. Prume Riesling from the Mosel, the Grocher Himmelreich. And you'll be like, oh, sorry, let me go get that
for
you.
Show off.
So, no, you're showing them this is what you
have ordered. Have you ever had people allow you to pour the wrong wine and then you find out the hard way when the check comes that they were expecting $65 and it was $410?
Oh, no, I'm way too meticulous.
Yeah, I have. I've had people, I mean, there's not often this happened. Maybe 8 years ago, these people looked at the label and they looked at me and they said, yeah, okay. And I found out later, all they were doing was looking at me going, I have no idea how this works. So I'm nodding and smiling like you do when people
are
speaking.
Did you pour them like
Ron
Cru Burgundy? They ordered just Village or something?
It wasn't my table, but it was another table. And it was two different wines by the same winemaker, and one was like $90 and one was $400. Yeah,
oh.
It was a big difference.
So when their server dropped the check, they were like, that guy over there, he poured us the wrong wine.
Yeah.
no, the guy with the beard.
But the important thing is that what you're just saying, they saw the wine and it was from the maker that they were expecting.
Yeah.
But it was a vineyard specific. So even if the server had said, the Grocher Himmelreich, they wouldn't have known what that meant. They just would have looked at the top and been like, oh, J.J. Prume, yeah, that's what we ordered.
Right. Yeah, that can happen.
But the important thing is that when you look at that label, what you're looking for is to confirm that it is what you ordered.
Yes.
Okay. And basically, so then when they nod, you open it?
You open it, table side.
Okay. And then what do you do with the cork?
I present it, and I present the damp side up so they can feel that it is
What are they
wet.
Checking for there?
I also smell the cork very quickly, and some people say you don't smell the cork. And I think that
What does smelling the cork tell you?
Sometimes it can tell you, it can give you an indication if the wine is flawed, meaning corked.
It can give you an indication.
It can give me an indication.
Not the person who doesn't know what
correct, but these people who
J.J. Himmelreich means
sometimes these people don't know what corkiness is, and right. I have smelled a cork and been like, oh, it smells okay, like this cork smells fine, and then I pour it out and I haven't given myself a taste, and then like at the end of the meal, they leave you know an eighth of a bottle and I taste the wine just to keep my taste buds going and. Mm. I'll taste it and go, oh my God, that was corked.
And what does
I
that
didn't
mean?
Smell it.
What does that mean it's corked?
It means it's when it's corky, there's a mold that grows in the cork tree. There are real cork trees, and most of them live in Portugal. And they shave them off, and then they create your corks, and there's a chlorine wash that they go through. And there's a particular bacteria that can grow in the cork tree, and when it meets the chlorine, it creates this funk basically that can affect your wine. It smells like wet cardboard that's been sitting in your basement for a long time.
And so that's what is that the bottom line? That's what we're looking for when we taste wines tableside?
Not just corkiness, you're also looking for oxidation and whether or not a wine is matterized or if it's just off. Sometimes it's just off. I mean, Brie, you guys know that sometimes the wine's just off and you're like, dude, this is not right. I need to go get you another bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think especially in fine dining restaurants, every bottle of wine should be tasted before the customer tastes the wine.
Yeah.
A flawed wine should not get it to the table.
Correct, and that's why you're smelling the cork or tasting it.
So what happens then when the customer says, I think this is corked, and you as the professional taste it, and you know 1,000% that it's not corked.
This is very exciting. We are going to have to do How to Behave the Wine Show Part 2 at some point, because we are out of time. I wanted to get into all that detail, but luckily Hannah's mom called, and we got to talk to her instead, and we got to talk about Schwa with Matt from Chicago. But yeah, I think the important thing to remember about tasting wines tableside, whether you're the server or the customer, is what we're doing is checking to see if the wine has gone bad in some way.
Yeah.
And if it hasn't, you take it. You're not checking to see if you like the wine, and if you're not crazy for it, you reject it and choose another, right?
Correct. But I have had people who've been like, you know, it's not corked, but I just don't like it. And the answer for me is, let's get you something that you do like, because then I can use that open bottle as a teaching tool. I can pour it out by the glass. I can still make money on it. Yeah. But the answer at the end of the day is, yes, and what can I get you?
Our answer is, professionals, is yes, what can we get you? But
yes,
our advice to people on this show is not that you're tasting the wine to reject it if you don't like it. You're tasting the wine to make sure that
it's sound.
Correct.
Yeah.
That it's sound.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, the best thing to do is to ask the professional who's serving it to you, not to assume things. And if you have any questions, just ask, right?
Yeah.
Right? It's always okay to ask questions. Yeah, Bree is nodding. It's radio, Bree. It's radio. All right, that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much to today's behavior winos, Sarah Sutel, Bree Conway, Owen Kotler, and a woman who always drinks her Merlot with just a splash of Sprite and a lime wedge, Hannah Howard. That would have been funnier if I'd got to that joke during the show. But
cheers.
Thanks to Hannah's mom.
Thanks, Brian.
And thanks to Hannah's mom, Rachel Howard, and to Matt from Chicago for calling in today. The How to Behave theme is courtesy of John Lundbaum and Big Five Chord. Check them out at BigFiveChord.com. Thanks to Joe Galarraga for engineering today's show and for answering the phone twice. You can always find episodes of How to Behave and lots of other great shows at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Brian Kaiser, and apropos of nothing except my experiences on the subway this week, please remember, children should be seen and not heard. By children, I mean anyone under 21. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.